Hello and welcome to Ditching Hourly. I'm Jonathan Stark. Today, I'm joined by guest Tim Burris. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jonathan.
To get started, could you give folks a little bit of background about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a software developer, and you know, I began developing software in the late 90s. And, you know, like a lot of people, I was just an employee, you know, just going through, you know, different companies or just kind of doing my thing. And I kind of felt this need that I would climb the ladder, you know? And so I was a developer and then I was a team lead and, you know, running a team. And then I finally took the step to like running a whole product development department. And, you know, and then sometime around like 2015, that wasn't what I wanted to do. I didn't want to be a manager and run a department. I wanted to get back to software development. So in 2015, you know, I went back to developing software for a company that did custom development. And that's really where I started my hourly billing kind of thing. So when I started doing custom software development for a firm, everything was hourly. Up till 2015, it was just salary. Man, when I started hourly, immediately it felt like something wasn't right.
Oh, really? Yeah. How long were you employed? So W-2.
I guess, let's see, from 98 to 2015. So that's 15, 17 years.
Wow. Okay. So then you're used to that kind of like, you know, a salary is presumably probably on a monthly basis, but still it's like your day to day is kind of disconnected from the money. It's like you show up, you do your thing and you leave.
Can you remember
the feeling? You said it felt wrong. Like in what way? Like what sort of, how did it make you feel?
It almost immediately, I started measuring everything, whether it was work related or not work related, by hours and money. Like, oh, this lunch just cost, it was an hour. It cost me $100. And it was the wrong, like it was clear that I should not measure me taking vacation and counting up the days and figuring out, well, if I wouldn't have gone to the beach, look how much I would have made, you know? And so I didn't have that when I was a salary employee, of course, because the vacation was paid, but there still was, even when I was an employee, I felt some hours, your salary, but you're kind of expected to put in 40 hours, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's the leeway, you know, no one's like really on you. Oh, I saw you put 39.75 hours in, but you still felt like there was a number of hours you needed to hit.
Right, as a part of the agreement. Did you have to track time as an employee?
When I was with the Department of Defense, I did. I had to track all of my hours, but it was pretty easy. That, you know, it was a great team, great management, and I just kind of put in 40 at the end of the week. You know, if I left early, then I would reduce it. But I technically had to track it, but it wasn't as tedious as once I really moved to hourly billing.
And so when you went solo, you immediately felt like, oh, hugging my kids is costing me money and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
How long? So you said that was immediate, but did you ever consider doing a different approach, or did it not occur to you at all? Like, were you just like, well, you know, hourly billing is what you do when you go solo. So that was your only, did you feel like that was your only choice, or did you not even consider other options, or how did that go?
I did, you know, I actually wasn't sure what anyone else, I had been salary for so long, and just worked on products. And then when I was doing this custom development for this firm and it was hourly, I mean, technically I was a salary employee to start, but I had to track every minute of the day and so that it could be billed to the appropriate client. So it wasn't very long into that quote, salary hourly billing that I switched to contractor because, you know, I was contractor so that I could get paid by the hour, because every hour I put in, the company was making money off of it, but I was only getting paid a salary. So, you know, I definitely felt like there was something wrong with that approach. And so I switched to contractor with the same company. So then I was billing every hour and getting paid for every hour, but it's still, I didn't know what the other options were. I'm like, man, this doesn't feel right for me, because like you said, I'm, you know, I hugged my kid. I just lost $30. And it didn't feel right. Honestly, it did not feel right for our clients. You know, everything was based on an estimate, and what if it goes over? And then, you know, they, they thought they might pay a certain amount, and then it turns out they pay more. Or the flip side is, for the organization I was working for, they thought it was going to be a certain number of hours, and then it came in under and they left money on the table. I mean, it truly felt like every aspect of it was wrong, and I didn't know. And it just so happens that one of my colleagues and a friend who was working with me there said, you got to check out Jonathan Stark. And, you know, and that was the first time I really started looking at seriously at any other options besides billing by the hour was when I found your Ditching Hourly stuff.
Cool. Yeah, that was one of the things that really drove me away from hourly. Like, I couldn't, once I saw the craziness of it, it hit me like a ton of bricks that, oh, it would make it so much easier to have happy clients if I just gave them a price. Duh.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, totally been there. Okay, so what happened next? You're contracting. It sounds like kind of like an agency situation.
Yeah. So I'm contracting. And, you know, I'm wanting to, I have wanted to start, you know, trying to do some other type of billing, whether it's value pricing or fixed price, you know, whatever, some other way to charge. But, you know, the organization I was with, they're fantastic, great people, but hourly billing was what is how they thought and how they believe that it should be done. And so they weren't open. They didn't see how to make a change into their billing method. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to make a change, but I don't take switching jobs easily or change like that very easily. And so I put a bunch of time into thinking. I started trying to find some projects on my own and just doing them, you know, outside of work. I eventually switched to working 4 days a week with this company, and that gave me a day to see if I could do my own thing and not charge by the hour. And it really was pretty immediate. I found clients pretty easily and who did not want to pay by the hour. That they wanted a number, like they would, you know, and I would go through that why conversation that you talk about, nowhere near as elegantly as you talk about, but I would stumble through it, and I still stumble through it, but I try to find out, well, what do they really need? You know, and then I would just give them a price to deliver whatever it is. And I'm still doing software development. So what I'm delivering is still, I'm doing something. I haven't transitioned into, I know how. I'm still in the I do stage. If your listeners are familiar with that concept.
Yes, I think they will. So still doing the hands work.
Yeah, but this is what I love, because I spent time not doing hands work and I didn't like it. And so I'm back to doing hands work, but it's not hourly.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. So what did you find with this? Well, actually, let's back up a little bit. So you only had 1 day a week to work on your business on the side. And you said it was easy for you to get clients. How did you get clients after being, you know, so long in-house? What was the way that you attracted leads?
Well, a couple were organizations here in the town that I technically live in a city, but it's more like a town. It's a small town feel. And, you know, I just had people that I knew, you know, either personally or through, you know, other ways. And, you know, I just started listening out for any opportunity, you know, that someone might need something. And so that was one way. I got some leads that way. And I don't want to give my secret away, but I have had a ton of luck on Upwork by being the different fish in the ocean, where I go in and I find the hourly bit contracts and I tell them that I won't do it by the hour. And, you know, let's have a call. If I'm a good fit, then I'll give you a price and it'll never be a nickel more. And I've had nothing but fantastic luck from that. And then a few of those have just led to others, you know, they refer me to the next person. So,
That's fascinating. So one of the things I'm not a huge fan of Upwork, but one of the things I like about it is that it's the farmer's market for software and other things. It's like people, sort of casual buyers are, and maybe not so casual buyers. It's a place they think of to go look for a pair of hands to build something. So it's an active market that's serving a real demand. So that's really cool.
And one thing I'll add is a lot of people on there don't even know what I look for on a client in Upwork is someone who doesn't call out their development language. They're not saying I need a Rails or Java or .NET. Those people are already too, I guess, knowledgeable. Or I'm looking for people that really need help. And the language would be something like, I need a database to do XYZ, and they don't really mean database. They mean maybe a mobile app or a web, but they need help and they don't know where else to go.
Right.
And those are the people I can help either by giving them a custom solution or pointing them in the right direction. Most of the time, you know, I can say, look, Mr. or Mrs. There's a software out there already does this. You should go check out X. And, you know, they go on about their way and they're just very thankful and maybe it'll come back around and they need something, but then you find that gem, you know, every now and then that they have a very, very custom process that they need custom software for.
Mm-hmm. That's actually genius. I love that approach of like looking for people who don't know your skill set. I feel like the more the buyer feels like they could do your job if they had the time, the worse it's going to be for you in terms of like being able to delight them.
So
it's just hilarious. Because those are some of my best clients. Back when I did development, those were my best clients too. Like, I never thought about it until you just said it, but they're the ones that just had no idea what.
And you feel better. You feel better about being able to help someone who really didn't even know where to start. You know, they know they have a problem and, you know, you try to understand what the problem is and, you know, try to understand how valuable it is. But you can help them so much and there's no tech jargon. I almost never tell them the quote tech stack that I'm using.
Yeah.
Every now and then someone will have, you know, had some knowledge and they're like, you know, Jimmy said, you know, .NET is great. And I'll say what I'm using. And then I'll say, but that's not what's important. What's important is what we're going to get out of this. I try to leave the jargon out. I don't mention database engines and software languages and different hosting. They trust me to put it all, the whole package together and deliver them an outcome.
Great. That's so good. I love that. So we're up to the point in the story where you've got a day a week, you're finding these sort of, you're cherry picking the greatest, but the best buyers off of Upwork. So before we move on from that, I don't think I was aware that Upwork would let you, like, don't you have to put an hourly rate on Upwork or is that not?
Yes, I do. And so I have to put an hourly and much like your five-page proposal, again, you know, a lot of the information I've taken from your content and tried to adapt it.
Mm-hmm.
My proposal is super short and super sweet. And it says, ignore the hourly rate on this. Upwork requires me to put it. Let's jump on a call. Let's talk about it. So yes, I have to put an hourly rate, but mm-hmm. I immediately tell them, there's not going to be an hourly rate. I'm going to give you a number and that will be the number.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that
goes. But what is your hourly rate? Like, did you decide to put it high or low or average?
Very, very high, very high. Sometimes, I don't know. Sometimes I put as much as 200 an hour, 150. Sometimes I've bounced around. Like sometimes, oh, maybe if I put it under 100, I'll get it. But then I immediately go, no. I want them to know I'm going to be expensive that. If they need a junior developer to just do a punch list for them, then they should find a junior developer to do a punch list.
Mm-hmm.
So I really am looking for people that are serious, but most of them don't even know what to expect for the hourly rate.
Right.
Most of the clients that I find, I ask them, you know, I'll ask point blank, you know, what did you think? Like, I didn't even know what to expect, you know? So they really aren't even sure what they should be thinking of in terms of an hourly rate.
Okay, cool. And then, so you talk to them on the phone. And then, can you bill them a fixed thing through Upwork or you just like take it off?
Yeah,
of
yeah, so the first thing that happens is you just have what's an interview, you know, you have a call and then they can refine the contract and they change it to a fixed price contract.
Got it. Okay. Well, that makes me like Upwork a lot better because it is an active marketplace. There's demand there that is very probably the biggest one. There's certainly others like Top Talent. I've heard some others that are like very specific. And so in your not to get too technical about Upwork, but this is fascinating. In your description, what's your profile like? Is it resume-ish, or but you don't really list, you don't care about jargon. So what do you say?
I don't remember what the profile. Honestly, most from what I hear about the clients, they don't read the profile anyway. They read the proposal. But the profile is fairly generic. I don't think that I mentioned any development languages in there. I have changed it a couple of times when I was early on, and it was jargon related, and then now I believe it's something to the effect of if you you have a problem and yo, I'll solve it. Check. I'm sorry, that was
that's fine.
You know, if you have an Excel application that's grown too large and you know you need a better solution, things to that effect.
Right.
I'd have to pull it up and read it.
No, that's okay. I was just curious. Okay. So that was, I mean, roughly speaking, what year are we talking about now, just to keep track of the timeline? So you get this 1 day a week Upwork thing happening and you're cherry picking these really good clients. Yeah,
so that was 2018 when I started down that road of, you know, 1 day a week, kind of doing my own thing. So that was about 4 years into that. About 4 years into that is 3.5 years probably when I started doing that.
Okay.
I guess I did that for a while, I guess until last year when I went 100%. I left that completely. I had scaled it back to the point that, you know, it got to a point where with the company, I wasn't doing them the justice by, you know, putting 3 days a week in, and, you know, they needed someone that would put in the hours, you know, they would. So, you know, we talked and, you know, decided that, I went and started doing a fixed price engagement for them where I mentor their junior developers. They have some entry level and junior developers. And so for a fixed price a month, I would be available to answer their questions or, you know, provide them guidance or, you know, things like that. And so other than that, I had cut them out completely aside from that fixed price and was just doing my own projects, all of my own projects.
Cool. And all fixed price.
All fixed price. Yes.
Nice. And well, see, you were doing some brains work with that sort of coaching retainer there. So how busy were you when you went solo? How confident were you that you would be sufficiently booked, let's say?
I've never been confident about anything when it comes to finding this. I mean, even now, so I was pretty, I had a couple of ongoing contracts at that point, you know, a couple of gigs that I was, you know, had already been paid for and needed to deliver. And so, you know, I felt like that, and if I could just get one more, I'd be good for the whole year in terms of, you know, will my kids still eat, and such, I was in a really good place. And, so that's kind of what gave me, I guess, the nerve to do it. And, since then, I've not had any problem. I've turned away people. It's not like people are just beating down my door, Tim, and I'm just, you know, swatting them away, but I have had the luxury of telling clients, you know, I don't think that this is going to be a good fit. You really need someone like this or that, and, you know, and either can refer to them somewhere else or just try to give them the next step. This is what I feel like you should do to go get help for your problem. And I've had that luxury. I mean, it's not like every day, but so far it's been great.
Cool. It's, you mentioned paid, but still have to deliver. So do these clients typically pay you up front?
Typically pay me up front. Again, everything comes from your material. I almost always request, you know, put in my quote that it's 100% up front. And sometimes they'll negotiate, well, you know, what about, you know, we split into two. Sometimes they'll try to say, well, why don't we do one at the end? And then I'll go with, well, we don't really know when it's going to end. You know, it's, I don't want, you know, that to be some kind of holdup. Are you trying to work towards some ending, you know, air quotes, but you can choose any day you want. You want to do 180 days, do whatever you want, as long as it's a measured time. And, you know, to do that. But most of the time people are upfront. Let's do it. Let's get started. I was surprised when when I first, the first time I wrote it, I'm like, this is not going to work. Who's going to pay me all this money up front? But they do. And most of the time they don't even ask about it.
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, it's not crazy to me, right? Cause I'm like used to it, but I do get people all the time. It's like one of the first questions I get when they see the template. It's like, well, surely you can't mean, you know, for a real software project is ask for upfront. And I'm like, well, they might say no, but you know, like more often than not, they checks in the mail. When can we start?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I was just so surprised, and it's been fantastic. And then you just have to deliver. And you know, I think you mentioned on this, but part of this whole process is you have to be willing to do what it takes to deliver the outcome. And that's what you've billed them for as an outcome. And for me, it's just do whatever it takes to deliver the outcome. But you have to be willing to do that.
Right. Double click on that one for us. So like, doesn't that make you nervous? You know what I mean? People always get scared about scope creep and that sort of thing. So what's been your experience with these kinds of clients that you're choosing to work with?
I did worry about scope creep. I did, but because I really, since we focus on the outcome, like even though I'm delivering software, they're going to say, oh, well, how about, can we add this other little thing? And I usually just don't even bat an eye. I just do it because they're not usually asking me for things that aren't part of meeting their outcome, whatever that outcome is, whether it's to replace an existing system or, you know, to meet some workflow they need to have digitized, whatever it is. It's clients, if you find good clients, they're not asking you to do things that are outside the realm of the project. And so scope creep has not been an issue. I feel like I'm charging enough that I guess what I'll say is I have agreed to take on the project for a price, and I've not yet been uncomfortable doing what it takes to deliver that. Not even close. Never have I felt like, man, this is getting drug out, you know, really far. You know, I've been lucky. I guess I've been lucky to find clients that have not done that. Sometimes you can tell on the phone if someone is going to be micromanaging, which might lend themselves to also asking for a bunch of extra stuff. I mean, I could be making stuff up, but it has not been my experience.
Yeah, it's like that. The you have the opposite of the, you know, cobbler's kid situation, where if someone was attracting clients with a jargony kind of, you know, lamp stack or whatever, you know, whatever the latest cool thing is, and you attract buyer, you're going to automatically attract buyers who know what those things are. And they are either, like we said before, you know, someone who is qualified to do the work that they want you to do, but they haven't got the time, or it's not a good use of their time. So those kinds of clients generally are super micromanagey and can get very scope creepy because they're telling you how to do your job. It's like, oh, you did it like that. Well, you should have done it like this. Do it over again. So under a fixed price, that can be very dangerous.
Sure. I definitely can see that will probably happen. I won't be immune to it, but the fact that I've gotten out of this mindset of time, I don't even count up the hours that I spent on it. I don't try to equate it to, did I make enough, air quotes, enough money on this project? It doesn't even cross my mind. You know, I fill my taxes out at the end of the year or pay my quarterlies or whatever, and everything is getting paid and you know, and everything is good. And that's all that's really has mattered. I don't have a time clock. If I don't come in, it's fine. You know, no one's, that the trade-off has been fine for me.
So go into that a little bit more. So what has been your experience working on these kinds of projects compared to your experience when you had to be billable all the time?
There's no stress, and it's so fun. I just know I need to deliver the software, and there's almost no meetings during the week. I look at my calendar. I'm like, is this thing working? I'm tapping it. You know, I mean, it's not like I never communicate with the client or that I never show them. That I definitely do. But, you know, going from my day being booked of meetings and sales calls and all this to a full week without anything on my calendar has been amazing. I, you know, the little things that are not even work related. Here in the South, there's a lot of outdoor festivals, like watermelon festivals and shrimp festivals, and one will be going on. And my wife and I will go, you know, it's Thursday. Why don't we just go? And we just go. And yeah. I don't have to tell anyone. And my clients are still happy because I still deliver what I need to deliver to them. It makes me so much more refreshed, you know, and I just start working. I sit down on my computer and just work on their project. They love what I'm delivering for them. I'm happy. They're happy. It's really great.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you're describing my life when I was doing that. So like in 2006, 2007, before I started doing like advisory retainers, pretty much exclusively, I was writing code and doing exactly this stuff. And it was like, this was back when I still, I got sick of writing code. I got sick of coding for money specifically. I still love writing code, but coding for money, I just got tired of it. But before that happened, oh my God, it was like, it was great. Like all the pressure's off and you could just like really dig into, or I, you know, speaking for myself, I could just really dig into this gnarly problem. And it wasn't, there was no meeting with the client about how we're going to solve this or whatever. It was just like, this is going to be fun. And there was no guilt of when I would like maybe refactor code. I'm like, I shouldn't bill them for this. I should have written it better in the first place.
That's exactly the point that I wanted to bring up, which is that, you know, refactoring, all those things, no one cares or knows, the client should not care or know about. And I do it without thinking. I change things up. I change technology. It doesn't matter. I do it. And what used to happen when you're hourly billing is you do something like you refactor an entire thing. Like, you know what? I don't like how I did this. I'm going to refactor it, but I'm not going to bill the client because that's not fair. So now, you feel frustrated that you just wasted a bunch of time and you didn't get anything for it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the right thing to do because it wasn't their fault, to a point of you never even consider it. You just do things the right way. And you don't think about the time. I mean, you go, oh, am I going to get this done before I have to go to soccer practice? You might think that, but, right. But you don't think about, oh, this is going to be 4 hours. And again, the dogs aren't going to get any food tonight. So it's not like that. It's just so different.
Yeah. It's hard to, I think just, you know, you just have to experience it. It's like, it's just so completely different. And it was, for me, it was instantaneous. I mean, like the very first client, I was like, oh, this is so relaxing. There is a different kind of pressure, which you've alluded to a couple of times. It's like, you have to deliver, like you need to get the thing working and awesome. And it's achieving whatever outcome that they hired you for in the first place. But you have so much freedom, so much latitude in your schedule and how you decide to do it at what, you know, especially if you're like really into doing, air quotes, doing things the right way, not hacking and slashing, you really enjoy elegant building, elegant software and all of that stuff. And then showing it to them and they're like, this is great. And you're like, yes.
that is it. Exactly. And one other thing I wanted to touch on there was, you know, no pressure to, you know, from time, but, or, you know, taking time off, but even when I was working for other companies, they were fantastic companies and they never pushed back if I wanted to, you know, take time off and go to a Christmas program and, or, you know, take the day off. There was never pushback. It was always flexible time, but I still felt the pressure to tell someone I'm not going to be at my desk. I'm going to be over here or out there, or I'm not. And it is still a different kind of freedom when you truly don't have to report your time.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you think you have flexible time, there's still a pressure and a stress that comes with accounting for that time that you're not going to be at your desk.
Yeah. Where were you?
Yeah. And again, no one was, I was lucky. I never worked for a company that was like, I noticed that you didn't commit any code in the last 2 hours. So are you still there? It was never that, but I felt the pressure on myself to make sure that someone knew when I wasn't going to be there. And it was just, I guess, self-imposed stress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's there though. I mean, that's the way that there's an expectation for all of these different arrangements, right? So like whatever the arrangement is, whether it's a salary position or it's a contract thing for an agency, or it's fixed price directly to the client, each one has this kind of like premise that is the agreement, you know, the expectations of both parties, like how it's going to be. And that's just how it is. If you have a boss, that is the expectation. No matter how nice they are, there's going to be that kind of like, even if it's self-imposed, that's part of the deal. But if it's not part of the deal, it just goes away. It's amazing.
Yeah, indeed.
So what are you, these days, are you still sort of, where your leads come from now, still Upwork, or do you have more sort of repeat business and word of mouth, or like
a... I have repeat business some. I mean, a lot of times once I deliver a solution to a company, I mean, that really has solved their biggest problems, and I don't necessarily get a ton of work from them, but I get referrals. You know, they know someone who also struggles with some kind of problem. And so it comes from there. Every now and then for an exciting, different kind of project, I'll still go on Upwork and I'll look around, see if someone, you know, again, I'm looking for that post that someone just needs help and they don't really know what they need. And, you know, I'll go after it. I also do something, I guess, that's different. The clients, when I build, since I am building software, you know, I'm still doing the do, not know how. They want changes to their software. You know, that's inevitable that you're going to deliver something. They're going to change and they're going to want new features. But the relationships have been so great that I really just will keep track of what they ask for. Probably have three clients that I do this. I just keep track of what they ask for. I'll hammer it out and I will just bill them, and they don't ask a question. They don't ask what it was going to cost beforehand. They don't ask, well, why was it this much? And I think that's just from trust. You know, they trust me and I trust that they're going to, you know, not question it. And I just try to apply my own value to it. I don't like, is this going to take me 4 hours? If it's adding something simple that anyone should expect to be in their software, well, that's kind of low value. Or if it's, you know, if it's bigger, I don't have a good example right now, but the price will change based on how much of a change it is for them. Like, are they bringing in a whole new data source, like QuickBooks or something? That's bigger. And that's something we talk about. But for the most part, I just keep a running tab and I'll just bill them quarterly. Like, you know what? I did some changes for you over the last few months. Here you go. And they're like, okay, just send me a check.
Cool. So let's get into the pricing part. So when you do come up with a fixed price for a project, how do you calculate it?
Oh, it's hard. I knew this was going to come up, and you know, I truly try to find out if there are any metrics on their end. Like sometimes it's easy. Some, you know, one thing was, oh, every single day, five days a week, our employees have to log in and have to go and pull these exports in manually. And it takes two employees 3 hours every single day. Well, you know, you can start to do the math and figure out by automating this solution, how much are you going to save them? And, you know, so how valuable, you know, you can compute it. So sometimes it's easy to find the value, like how valuable, but a lot of times it's not. And I guess I would say it's kind of from the hip, just experience of software. I don't get into counting up the hours, but so I do have to think about how complex we integrating five different data sources. You know, it's dynamic in that I just try to get a feel for what it might be worth. But it's definitely an art, not a science. Not like I read about a lot of your content.
Yeah, it really, it is more art than science. There's a sort of, you know, there's like with music, there are frameworks that you can use, you know, like whatever, like a chord progression or just the notes, right? Like there's all these sort of things that you use to create something that ultimately is art. So, you know, that's what the why conversation is. Obviously you've heard that before, maybe someone listening hasn't, but like the why conversation is designed to help you uncover the reason that the person is even spending time to talk to someone like you. So the client is, something changed in their world. Like things were fine and now they're not. So it's something, you went to a breaking point or some sort of asteroid came into their world. you know, like I always say, like, oh, Amazon came into the market, they need to, or they've got some competitor that's eating their lunch. Like something happened. And one day they weren't looking for a software developer, and then the next day they were. And what was that thing that happened, and why does it matter? And the more it matters, and generally speaking, the bigger the company, or the bigger the bigger the company, the bigger the problem. So the thing that changed, or the risk, or the opportunity, or the expensive problem type of thing. And it can be difficult to uncover that with the buyer, but the kinds of buyers that you are filtering down for are exactly the kind that can usually answer this question more easily than other people. Like they're not kind of impressed by the fanciness. They're probably more than anything, they're probably scared. I mean, you tell me, but like a lot of times they're probably kind of nervous about this undertaking. They probably have a sense that it'll be pretty expensive. If they've never had software built before, they might imagine it's just going to be really expensive, or, you know, pricey and fraught with risk. And they really want someone who they can trust because they don't know what they're talking about. So they don't know how to even vet a good software developer from a not so good software developer.
Yeah, that's bang on. That, you know, most of the time the clients, they don't know what to expect. And again, part of what I'm selling is I'm going to deliver it no matter what it takes. Like, don't worry about what it's going to take for me to make this happen, or if it's going to, quote, take me longer than if I say, I think, well, you know, you'll be able to give this to, you know, you'll be able to go live with this in 6 months or 3 months. Don't get hung up on that date. I'm going to deliver it to you. And if it takes longer, because things, don't worry, this price gets you your outcome. But while I never count hours, sometimes I am trying to figure out a price and I'm having a difficult time quantifying, well, how much is this going to save them? They don't always want to throw out numbers to me. You know, like, oh, we're wasting $100,000 a year on this problem. They're not usually as forthcoming as that with me. And it's probably because I'm not very good at the why conversation. But so I will just have to draw on some experience and go, okay, I don't often build CRMs. There's a billion CRMs out there, but I have done one. It was a very custom process, and like they had this down to a science how it needed to work. So I go and I think about it. I'm like, you know, in the worst case scenario, I might actually spend two or three full months building this thing. And that did play into me coming up with a number, because I didn't know how much it was going to save them. They were just transitioning from paper to electronic. So I took that, quote, time into account as I'm trying to come up with a number. And I just kind of rolled the dice and hoped that they weren't freaked out. And, you know, it was great. They were fine. I delivered. Everything was amazing. So I won't say I never think of time. I almost never think of time is what I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, at a certain point you have to, especially if you're doing implementation and hands work, you, mm-hmm. at a certain point you have to know what your costs are. So like if you were, I don't know, building a house and you were going to give a one price for like everything, including the materials, you need to know how much the materials are going to be so that you aren't literally losing money on the house. Where folks like us, it feels a little weirder because we didn't have to go out and buy the hours that we're selling. Like, we get them for free every day.
Yeah.
So yeah, it doesn't feel like there's a cost, but there is. So you kind of have to.
And the other part of it, so once I come up with that number, if it's one that's harder to quantify, you know, I don't have hard numbers on what I'm going to save them. It comes down to, okay, 3 months, will I be comfortable delivering whatever the outcome is for this price, no matter what? What if I run into a huge snag and it's going to take me, I'm going to have to redo a bunch of things, or I'm going to have to pull in, you know, some other type of integration, or I'm going to have to learn something, some technology I don't know, or whatever it is. Am I okay with doing that for this price, no matter how long it takes? And that's what I come down to, like, what number will I be? Because I have to deliver. I mean, I'm never not going to deliver it. What if it takes me 3 years? It's going to take me 3 years. I'm going to do it. So, I mean, that's obviously an exaggeration, but the point is, when I take the contract, I'm going to do it no matter what it takes. I'm never going to ask them for anything. I'm never going to complain to them and say, oh boy, this was tough. It was a lot harder than I thought. That's just not the way to be. So that number has to be something that, from my experience, I'm good with.
Can you give us an order of magnitude of, like, in terms of how big the projects are? So is 3 months like a typical length, or sometimes they're...
Yeah. I guess 3 months to, but it's hard. There were times when I was only working, quote, a day a week, or, you know, a day a week and some mornings. So, you know, it might've taken longer, but, a few months, is common. 6 months is not uncommon either. Here's what I'll say. So if I'm doing a 6 month project, I'm not all my eggs in one basket. I'll also have another engagement going on. I'm not interested in taking on so much work that clients aren't happy, but at the same time, I'm not just focused on just one thing. I will, you know, take on maybe two or three projects or something like that. If I have a mentoring engagement, maybe that's good enough, and I'll focus on just doing for one client and mentoring, you know, for another. But I guess 3 to 8 months are typical.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know that there's when you're switching from hourly to fixed price, regardless of how you calculate the fixed price, you're taking on the responsibility to manage the scope and the client, so that they don't, you know, ask you to just don't keep piling stuff on your plate, which you've really made easy for yourself by choosing to work with the kinds of clients you have. So I can see why people who are entertaining this kind of a shift, when they're thinking about it, they get really nervous about scope creep, because they are taking on some risk, right? Like, they could end up working twice as many hours as they would have thought, you know? So if they would have estimated 100 hours and they give a fixed price for 100 hours and then it ends up being 200 hours, they're going to feel like they shouldn't have done that, like they got screwed. But perhaps the thing they're not realizing is you probably could have set your price higher than you did, or the experience of working with that client in the second 100 hours is going to be night and day if you're on the clock versus you gave them a fixed price.
Exactly. Yeah. That's yeah.
Right. So you are taking on some financial risk. You're de-risking the odds of having a nightmare client for 100 hours, because they're just going to get more and more upset with you because, you know, they're finger pointing like, well, you know, you didn't tell me it was needed to have this and like, or whatever. And
one thing I'll say is doing that now today is a lot easier. I couldn't imagine, well, one, my experience, you know, after doing this for 25 years, I've seen a lot, but software, there's not as many unknowns in software anymore as we had when we were doing software in the early 2000s and things were changing. I mean, AI is starting to throw a wrench in some things, but for the most part, there are not that many challenges that you can't have an idea about what that's going to be. You know, okay, we're going to integrate with an API. There's a billion APIs and they almost all work the same. You don't need to get hung up on, well, oh, they're using OAuth. Again, I don't want to start throwing out lingo, but that's the thing. You shouldn't have to worry about, oh, QuickBooks, done. Okay. It's just an API. Oh, Monday.com, done. Okay. It's another API. As long as you kind of know what they need, and I never draw out the screens. I'm not out there saying, all right, I'm going to put a text box here. I'm going to do, like, just, you need a problem solved. I'm going to solve it. And then I just kind of look through like, okay, these are the integrations and this is how complex it is. And so here's, and it's hard for it to really go too far off the rails unless you get unlucky and you get a client who's then throwing in a bunch of other things like, oh yeah, we also wanted it to communicate with our sensors over on the grain silo. Like, what? I didn't know this was, there was no IoT in this.
Yeah.
Like,
we assumed that you'd just also throw in an iOS app.
Yeah, exactly. So your why conversation should answer that, because you really should you know, even someone like me who doesn't do the why as great as I know that I don't do it as great as I should, I still feel like I know all the boundaries once I'm done with that call. Like, what are we talking about here? I have all that information. And so it is scary, but if you just put your fear aside for a second and think about, well, I mean, really, you kind of know the different types of things you're going to do. And software is kind of, everything's been done.
Yeah, it's way easier now. It's so much easier now. So in certain ways, it's, I mean, there's certain ways that's, I feel like it's gotten a little over-engineered, but boy, you know, you just throw a node module in, done. And it's like, or whatever, or gems or whatever you're working on. There's like so many people, there's so much open source software, so many APIs.
So indeed. Exactly.
Is there any, I'm curious, what other patterns could you share with us about the types of clients that you have, other than that kind of like they're non-technical, they're extraordinarily non-technical? Are you building like work group software in most cases? Is it like back office stuff, or is it sometimes client facing? Is it sometimes B2C? Or is it all B2B?
A lot of times it's back office. A big thing is people who have Excel workbooks that they started in the 90s and it runs their entire business.
Like, yeah.
You know, and these things do, Excel is amazing, but man, sometimes it's doing things it should not be doing. And, you know, and they really, you know, clients will get to a point where they're like, it's just not working. And so it's replacing that kind of back office. But we haven't touched on like niching down. I haven't done that, but because I sometimes take on IoT projects, you know, I'll do something, a software project that interfaces with PLCs, you know, sensors out there in the field that are doing things. And so it really can be all over the spectrum, which is one of the things I love, but the majority of my clients end up wanting back office things that run their business. They have processes, and that's how they're successful. They have a workflow that is amazing, and that's why they're better than their competitors, but they need a software that matches it. Because if it's the same thing everyone else is doing, there's already a software for it. You don't need me. Just right. Go get it. Go get what I need is someone who, I mean, many times what they are doing in Excel or Access or whatever, or however they're doing it on paper, that is their bread and butter of their business. That is why they're successful. And that's why they need a solution to, you know, to help them.
Excellent. Yeah. That's, you just reminded me of my FileMaker days. Cause that was FileMaker's bread and butter was like people who are outgrowing Excel. So let's just one more thing on this. And I'm looking at the clock, but one more thing about, taking on an IoT job, like out of the blue, that seems very risky for someone who's going to give a fixed price. Is it that you do have some experience with it, but you're not an expert? It's something you've done once or twice.
I do have experience. I fortunately at the place where I was doing custom development, they went complete IoT, and so I got some experience doing IoT with them, and so that helps. I don't know that I would have the I think it would be too risky if I didn't have an understanding of it. I can't think of any offhand, but I know there's going to be some some subjects out there that I would not take on. AI, for one, I have no idea about artificial intelligence. Don't really have an interest in taking it on. And if someone mentions it, well, I'm not your guy for that. But for IoT, yeah, I've had some experience and it's fun.
Cool. Yeah, it must be. I've never done it, but it does seem like fun. What about just something that I think is old school like us? Like, what about firmware? If somebody said, "Oh, we need firmware for like a," I don't know.
No, that's not me. I mean, that low level, it needs to make it to the. So when I'm doing IoT, it's typically these PLCs and these sensors are already built by either, you know, an engineer they have on, you know, on staff, or they purchase one. And those things have different protocols that communicate, and then I handle it from that point on. So no, I'm not writing firmware. I it's on the computer, you know, on the PC if he wants it, once I handle it for the most part.
All right, cool. So you've got some boundary lines where, you know, you just know there's like an electric fence around certain things that you're like, I don't want to give a fixed bid for that. That would be crazy. It's like the kind of thing that could blow up in my face.
Yeah, and other things like mobile apps, while I'll do mobile apps, things that are flashy, not flash, things that are like marketing related, or like, I'm not a web designer and I'm a software developer or web app developer. It's different and people don't always understand that there's a difference, but you know, those kind of mobile, I guess office related mobile apps are what I would do, not a, not an app for Pizza Hut.
Right. Yeah. So like workflow solutions.
Yes.
Cool. Well, man, this has been really good. It's, I guess I shouldn't be surprised that there's so many parallels, because we've kind of been in the game this similar number of years. And, but it's really good to hear from some, you know, this is the first time we've ever talked. It's really good to hear that sort of like the path, basically that it's not just me, like the pattern can repeat itself at least once. and with a lot of other people I've worked with as well, like worked with directly. But yeah, I feel like the thing I hope the listener takes away most from this is your comment about tapping the calendar. Like, is this thing working? You know, like just be like, look, because it's the same with me. It's like, you just look at the calendar, you're like, oh, you know, I've got stuff I have to do, but you know, I don't have a keeper. I don't have someone that's like, my day is not being controlled by someone else's agenda. It's just so, I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I wanted to find a way that I wasn't going to quote track hours all the time. And it just turns out that when you don't have to track hours, then that also means you don't have a bunch of meetings. You don't have a bunch of calendar items, because that's one of the side effects of just delivering outcomes is no one's asking for a status update every afternoon.
Cool. Well, Tim, if people wanted to reach out and maybe ask you a follow-up question or just connect with you in general, where could they do that?
My website, which is chalklogic.com. For people who are interested in software development, I have a YouTube channel. So YouTube at Tim Burris. But it's all Microsoft.net. I know we're not talking lingo and stuff, but if you check out my YouTube, it's not going to be client-based. It's going to be developer-based, because that's what I like to do. But yeah, chalklogic.com or at Tim Burris on YouTube.
Awesome. Thanks a million, Tim.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, folks, that's it for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark, and I hope you join me again next time for Ditching Hourly. Bye.